He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And yes, it is. And I've got a few things to start out with for this show. And one of them is about to talk a little bit about the Jeep Grand Wagoneer L, I guess you got to put the L past it, which has arrived in Jeep dealerships in many places. And I have spent a little time scrutinizing the stickers of the allotment that came into the Tarrington Jeep dealership. And the interesting thing that I saw in that allotment, which consisted of, I think, 8 or 9 vehicles, is that there was one with a sold sign on it, and it was the most expensive one of the 9 vehicles that was in their lot, which means it had the most options. And that price was $59,000, which is not really too expensive. The list price starts around for these vehicles at about $49,500, which actually appears to be a really good value because it comes with enough items in it that I don't know that you'd really have to option it up to $59,000 or $65,000. The other thing about the Greek Grand Cherokee version of this new great Grand Wagoneer, which is coming and it hasn't arrived at this particular dealership yet, so I couldn't really compare, is the sticker prices on the Grand Wagoneer are going to be significantly higher than those of the Grand Cherokee. And I'm not sure there's a whole lot of difference. Now, there's a lot of difference that's stated in the articles about them. And I know, Jay, I heard you want to kick in here. But I looked at the options on the most expensive one that was already spoken for. And actually, I think it was $65,000, not $59,000. And then when I read an article about the Grand Wagoneer, for listeners who are listening, they had a lot of the things, they were touting a lot of the things in the Grand Wagoneer that I saw on the sticker label on the Grand Cherokee. And which leads me to say to somebody listening, it looks to me like you could go, if you didn't need the Grand Wagoneer, meaning the Wagoneer name on your vehicle instead of the Cherokee, the Grand Cherokee label on your vehicle, you might be able to save a lot of money but get most of the many, if not all, of the things that you can spec out or that a Grand Wagoneer comes with. Enough on that. I think it's going to be
Let me just barge in 2 seconds. They're two different vehicles, two different sizes. The Grand Wagoneer, the Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer are a much bigger vehicle than the Grand Cherokee is.
That's correct.
Are the size, if not bigger, than a Suburban or an Expedition.
Well, the Grand Wagoneer may be even bigger than the Grand Cherokee L. Grand Cherokee L is not the Grand Cherokee that everybody who's listening and maybe driving is on the road today. They're supposedly redoing the Grand Cherokee, the old version of the Grand Cherokee. I don't think it's going to be supplanted totally by the Grand Cherokee L. The Grand Cherokee L is definitely a three-seat, three-row vehicle. It comes with split row second seats or a bench seat, which is a split seat that has a middle filler in the what is a split row second seat in some of the versions. What I'm waiting to see about the Grand Cherokee is whether it is in size dimensionally significantly bigger than the Grand Cherokee L. And until I see that, I can't give the listeners any further information except that. You can get a lot of the things that I read about as being available on the Grand Wagoneer optioned into a Grand Cherokee L version, which is similar. Now, since I was there at the dealership lot last week, I have seen several vehicles on the road, and they are initially a little hard to discern from the front ends of the other versions of the because they have the 7-slot grill. And the grill looks an awful lot like the grill on the Cherokees and I think the Grand Cherokees. So you can discern it if you're really a car buff like Jay and I are. But you could go by it and not realize it was one of the newest vehicles on the road. I think it's going to be a very good saleable vehicle, quite frankly, after looking at it live in the parking lot. I was not able to get into any of the vehicles. They were all locked. Many times you can go through a lot and find a vehicle that has not been locked by management, and you can get in and poke around the vehicle without having to get a salesperson to open it up and then try to sell it to you. So I couldn't get in and sit in the seats and all that, but it has a lot of basically signature Jeep interior features, steering wheel, for example, drive select knobs and things like that. But it is definitely a significant upgrade over anything that Jeep has had available for us to this date. And good for Jeep. That's that on that topic. I read this morning that in all places, a road and track online, that Ford is sending out a recall. We haven't done recalls on this show for some time because there really hasn't been a lot of significant recall listings of what I consider to be important. Although maybe somebody might say all recalls are important, but this one that concerns seat belts in about 16,000 or maybe it was 30,000 of 2021 Ford F-150 pickup trucks. And the Road and Track article says the recommendation is to park your vehicle and don't drive it. That's ludicrous from my point of view. The seat belts apparently have a alignment issue inside their system, which if they're not aligned properly, the webbing can get chafed and become weakened and may not work properly. I don't think that warrants a necessary parking of your vehicle and do not drive situation, but that's you listeners who own F-150s. If you've got a 2021 early production model, or maybe not early, I don't know what the serial numbers are, be careful if you get in an accident and hope your seatbelt works. Jay?
Well, yeah. Jay has to say about Ford F-150s and Ford pickup trucks that I just read that Ford had 120,000 pre-orders for the Lightning for the fully electric.
I know. It's really interesting, truck. I think.
And
they've doubled their production goal
production
now for this Lightning.
Next year. But the production capabilities at this point are like 10,000 vehicles a year. So obviously, even though Ford is aiming to double that within the first 2 years of production, and they've spent, I think, over $800 million upgrading facilities or are in the process of upgrading facilities to be able to do so. Just a couple of tidbits about the EV world. Motor Trend did a review. They were the first journalists to be allowed to drive the Lucid Air, which is that new venture out of Arizona, new high-end electric car coming out with a base price of $169,000. And I forget who did the review, but he absolutely loved the car, even though it is a full-size and then some luxury car. It apparently is a lot of fun to drive. It's got great range. It'll be interesting to see how this new company can actually produce cars. We all know it's one thing putting out a concept car, and it's another to get into full production mode. Parallel to that, Rivian is going to start producing vehicles as well. We've seen pictures of their factories or their factory, and it seems like it's ready to go. I think that's about it on what I have to say about EVs for this week. I think it's interesting to see that the car market is still a very hot market. The price of used cars are a bunch of cars that are now more expensive on the used car market than they were when they came on the market last year, just in 2020. Yeah. Toyota RAV4 hybrids, Chevy Corvettes, Kia Tellurides are all selling for $5,000 to $7,000 more on the used car market than they traded, than their list price was just a year ago.
Well, Jay, I want to interject here. I haven't been to those dealerships to look at the sticker prices, but the sticker prices have not risen on brand new ones, that is 2021s and
maybe 2022s.
So this is an interesting situation of availability and what the used car market is trying to do with some of these vehicles. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I think, or maybe I didn't, but here it goes, that when I bought my Carvana Cherokee, it was listed with 39,000 miles plus or minus. I was $22,900 prior to excluding state taxes and delivery charge of $400. Subsequent to that, when we've been talking about used car prices and how they've been known to be skyrocketing, I have gone back on Carvana and looked at specifically Jeep Cherokee pricing to see what's happened to them. And I saw a very wide range of pricing, but all of them, anyone that I would have been interested in as an alternative to what I bought, was significantly higher in most instances, even with the same mileage on it. So you're right. These used car prices have been jumping, and to the degree that you can or cannot find brand new ones of these vehicles that you're looking at, you have to decide on your patience level and whether or not you want to go and buy a used RAV4, for example. And the RAV4 Hybrid is a very popular vehicle, but to that end, to electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles, Toyota is big on hybrids. They have some all electrics coming.
Well, let me just interject for a second. What is the September 6th Toyota thing that is stopping? Can anyone answer that for me?
No, I don't know, but there's a chip crisis that's still looming.
Yeah.
And manufacturers are being hit. I think BMW's had a recent warning to dealers, and Audi and also some other manufacturers are coming up against the fact that if they had supplies of chips early on in this crisis, they are now running out of them, and they are finding it indeed difficult to get new batches of chips.
Well, okay, so I think it's fair to assume that prices are going up, and the average price of a new car has soared from, it was in the $37,000 range, it's up to $41,000
now. That's the sales. It's not the asking price.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that the prices of cars have gone up 17%. It just means that the average transaction price has gone up, so maybe people are just spending more money on cars.
Well, yes, except that also part of the chip crisis situation has allowed dealers not to sit there and discount their cars because they have limited stocks of whatever they want.
Yes, but
and
also there
the
are...
buyers are caving, and if they want something badly enough, they're going to pay what it takes to get it.
Right, well, but meanwhile, there are just lots and lots and lots and lots and lots full of cars that just
sit
there.
That is correct, in many cases.
So it's sort of, I mean, at some point, either these wires are going to touch or not, but...
Well, there are definitely lots of used car lots around.
No, new cars.
I know that.
Okay.
There are lots of manufacturers with new cars. Their advertising on TV is just going along as if there isn't any shortage.
When there's no shortage, when demand is stronger than supply... prices go up and
well,
you know,
that's
the
because they're not
better,
giving $3,500 off a car the way they do when they're selling them and when they're sales selling them. And so the dealers can hold out for the list prices. Maybe, you know, a lot of dealers do ADMs, additional dealer markups.
Yeah,
and they do etching and they wait a minute, Jay, just a minute. They do etching, glass etching, and they do special wax surfaces, and they also put market value markups. And as a new car buyer-to-be these days, you have to be very knowledgeable to sort of avoid some of these things if you don't want to get necessarily gouged in a new car price.
All right, let us talk about the Historic Festival, Jay.
Yes, so big week ahead at Lime Rock. I think it is Historic Festival 39 coming to Lime Rock Park this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Labor Day Monday, with obviously no racing on Sunday, a little more affordable tickets for that day. There will be a classic car show on the main straight of the track. If you're not particularly interested in racing or do not want to spend the, relatively big dollars to get a weekend pass, the Sunday walk in the park is... certainly a very pleasant option. I will be there as a vendor for, the duration. Always great cars, good racing. It's always, to me, it's amazing to see people actually race what can be considered to be works of art and irreplaceable cars.
What's really
and,
nice is that they go around the track.
No, it should be, you know, it should be great. There is also the parade on Thursday that starts at Lime Rock at 4 p.m. And will end after a 17-mile loop, will end in the center of Falls Village, where there will be, as usual, a little festival, a bunch of food vendors, and where people will be able to see the cars up close. And or see them, you know, drive by along the roads in our towns, in Salisbury, Lakeville. So
is there a website for it, Jay?
Go ahead, Robin.
Jay, is there a website for it? For people to go to and see the actual schedule?
I missed that.
Is there a website?
Is there a website?
Yeah, limerock.com.
Okay.
It's pretty much on the front page of their site.
To that end, Skip Barber is going to be on a radio station show this afternoon. They're touting it to probably do what Jay has just done for our listeners here at WHCT Radio.
Okay. That's good. And during the rebroadcast, ladies and gentlemen, make sure that if you are interested, go over to go over to Limerick. It's always a wonderful thing. And what is so wonderful in particularly now is to see people who are actually enthusiastic about something.
Yes,
that's exactly. that is hugely, if not inspiring, it is encouraging.
Well, I think the Vintage Car Festival is annually a very much expected fun thing to do. There's certainly a lot of car enthusiasts out there, and let me tell you, I'm not quite, I don't know what we're calling vintage cars these days. Jay, you may be able to jump in and help on that, but I know some of the vintage cars are beyond my interest level, but I must say I've been driving a couple of sort of newer vintage cars that don't have all the doodads that the new cars have on it, and let me tell you, vintage cars are in many ways more pleasurable to drive than some of the newer vehicles out there. If you don't feel like you need to go to 0-60 in 1.9 seconds or something like that, they're just, you go at a slower speed in many cases. You get to look at things you don't see going at higher speeds. And plus you get a lot of people who love seeing you come down the road and they wave at you and it's just a very sort of positive feeling. Type of vehicle to have out on the road. And to that end, I think they're going to be on the road for many years to come, even as we move into the electric car era.
So, Robin, this is the opportunity for you to take out your Mazda RX-7 because it totally qualifies. I hate to break it to you.
I know, but you're right. It does.
It's pushing at 40 years old, at least 35 years old, so it certainly qualifies as a...
And it is one of the fun cars to drive, let me tell you. I saw a Mundial show on TV, Jay, you know what that is, where they had three 1986 versions of the Datsun or a Nissan vehicle, the Mazda RX-7, and one other one, and they were extolling the pleasures of not having touch screens in these cars, having dials on the dashboard, and just enjoying, I think one of them was a convertible, enjoying driving these older vehicles out on country roads. I think, I don't know if it was done in California or not. I forget where they drive most of their vehicles. But it was just wonderful listening to the enthusiasm of the drivers on this show, extolling the pleasures of older vehicles. And I must say, I echo it thoroughly when I get in my RX-7. They were discussing the balances, the wonderful balance of the RX-7 and the Nissans, and you know, they just didn't, they've just forgotten about all the new stuff that's coming on into the world here that we're talking about a lot on this show.
And I am curious, every so often, is there a throwback? Is there a kid, for example, who just really wants a car that doesn't have a touchscreen?
I would guess probably the answer is yes.
Jay?
Well, I missed the question. I'm sorry.
Is there a kid? I said, is there a throwback from time to time? Is there a kid who just doesn't want a touch screen? I'm sorry, but actually wants a car to drive.
I don't know, honestly.
Well, what's your take, Jay? You're a kid in one sense of this question, and so am I.
I like screens in cars, personally. I we've gone over that a bunch of times. But just to end with a safety tip here, let's keep in mind that these cars don't have all the safety features and or all the features that we find on modern cars. They're going to be all over the countryside in the next week and over the next weekend. Cut them some slack. Try to enjoy, spot the cars when you see them. But some of them may not have functioning turn signals or lights that are as strong as new cars. They also don't have the safety features that modern cars have.
So don't hit them. Is that what you're saying, Jay?
What's that?
So you're saying don't hit them.
Don't hit them. Be just be, you know.
Deferential to them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're driving one of those classic cars, as I've ridden with you in your RX-7, keep in mind as a driver that they do not have the safety features of new cars.
That's correct. No airbags. Sometimes they're old enough not to have seat belts or only have lap belts instead of shoulder belts and lap belts. Though the Mazda RX-7, when you were alluding to that I have, is an 84, and it does have seat belts, but it has no airbags. It certainly doesn't have the impact of characteristics of the newer cars from standpoint of if you run into something. On the other hand, the metal on the hood, the metal on the doors is thicker than on many of the new cars, or at least it certainly seems like it is. As I've said many times to people when we talk about things, I remember in the 70s and 60s, you could go to a drive-in movie and you could sit on the hood of a car and it wouldn't bend or dent. I'm not sure you can do that today. Jay, do you have an opinion?
Yeah, I think the metal on the sheet metal may be thicker, but the structure of the cars were way flimsier then than they are now.
Right.
There's no comparison. Modern cars are the safest and the strongest they've ever
been. They are indeed. I have had occasion to see the new Ford Bronco up close. I haven't had a chance to drive in it. I love it. This is a big one, not the Bronco Sport, which is quite noticeable on the roads and gets good reviews for its own type of the Bronco that's out there. The magazines, I think we mentioned a little bit last week, are raving about the Badlands edition with the 35-inch tires, and it drives better than the Wrangler and blah, blah, blah. So you've got all this competition going on now that's starting between Jeep and Ford. Ford has intelligently decided to drop the concept of a Bronco pickup. I thought that was stupid to try to match Jeep vehicle for vehicle, but they've apparently dropped the idea of making a Ford Bronco pickup, and I don't think anybody's going to miss it in the Bronco world. That's my thought about that. Jay, anything you have to say?
I have no interest in those vehicles, nor the Wrangler, nor the Bronco. I think they're overbloated vehicles if you're going to go off-roading. I would love to see the Suzuki, I can't even remember its name.
Yeah, but I was behind one yesterday.
No, there's no new Suzuki.
No, not a new one. I was behind one of the ones.
Oh, one of the old ones?
Yeah, four-door, long version of it, and it was a great-looking vehicle. It was in wonderful condition. It was over in eastern Massachusetts where I was for the weekend, and I thought of you, Jay, because you have been touting the virtues of the Suzuki vehicles, and why don't they bring it back? I could agree with you. It's narrow, it's very practical, and it's old world.
Yep, I look forward to seeing a bunch of cool cars at Lime Rock this weekend.
Have fun. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.